Shana Tova. Hope you've all had meaningful experiences over the holidays. So I want to start with the end of Yom Kippur, because for those of you that were at TBZ, what I heard Rav Claudia saying, and I think that the thrust of the liturgy in our tradition is that if we've gone through Yom Kippur and the whole high holiday period in the appropriate way, appropriate is, you know, however we interpret it, we come through the process clean, that our sins are forgiven, that we have the ability to start a new year fresh. In some ways, people say like a new person. And the other word that I think of besides clean is clear, that somehow cobwebs have been cleaned through, and that there's a sense of, with this purity, there's a sense of purity of thought, and that it's clearer. So not pure in a moral sense in any way, but that maybe some of the things that have de-energized or drained our thinking process have been resolved or moved. I don't know if this is literally true for everyone. It wasn't necessarily true for me this year, but I tend to think of it as the ideal, or that, you know, what we're striving for. So I was left with a question, which is, so we go from this, we have this clarity, and then 5 days later, which will be this Sunday night, we go into the holiday of Sukkot. And on the one hand, Sukkot is Zman Simchatenu, the time of our joy. And I'll talk about what some people teach us about joy in a couple minutes. But it's also the holiday where we leave our physical homes that, you know, our structures that, except for maybe those in certain parts of Florida and other precarious places, they're places where we feel protected from the elements, and also we can lock our windows and doors and feel safe from intruders. We leave those places and we go out into a sukkah, which doesn't have locks on the door, you know, it doesn't have a secure structure. And it's almost as if the clarity, and you might prefer a different word than clarity, but some assuredness is removed. And part of it is that, at least the way I've been taught, Sukkot is a time to remember that all the hubris we might feel after feeling good about going through the high holidays, that really we live a life that is fragile, and that we need to be able to see the heavens through the roof of the sukkah to remind us that regardless of how much agency we think we have in our lives, ultimately we're dependent on something greater than ourselves. And so the question can become, you know, why do we make this leap so fast? And I think it's obvious that the tradition doesn't want us to be stuck in the hubris of thinking that you know, we got to a place of I'm now a person who's good and can, you know, feel worthy this year. I did that all myself. And I just wanted to share something which isn't in what I prepared, but it happened during the meditation for me, which is that Rosh Hashanah was my father's birthday, and he's no longer alive. He would have been 100 years old if he were alive. So I have this association with him that whenever I was troubled, he would do his best to try and comfort me by saying, well, let's put it into perspective. Put it into perspective. You're, you know, it's not as bad as it seems. And I, for those of you that are psychiatrists or therapists, you know that, and I know from my own personal experience, that is not necessarily comforting. It can feel dismissive, or it can feel like, well, you didn't really hear what I said, and, you know, I want some help before you just tell me to put it in perspective. But I think that what I've understood from some of the reading I did for this talk is that part of part of what I think my father meant when he said put it in perspective was not what I might have heard, which is it's not really that bad, but that you're not alone, and that this is a human response to what you're going through. And while it doesn't change the reality of what you're experiencing, perhaps it helps to know that lots of people are with you on this. And our tradition would say, and God is with you on this. And that for our tradition, it's very powerful to have the ability to believe, because I think it's hard for most people to believe that God is actually present and with them on what, in whatever it is. But what I found too is that it's also built into our tradition and very powerful to realize that other people are with you on this and that you're not alone in that way. So I wanted to, so I think that, you know, when we come out of the high holidays, we're feeling this sense of, as I said, some direction, and immediately we build this house. And Rabbi Alan Liu, Alav HaShalom, wrote that building the sukkah exposes us to the idea of a house as an illusion. The idea of a house is that it gives us security, shelter, haven from the storm. But no house can really offer this, as people in Florida realized. No building of wood and stone can ever afford us protection from the disorder that is always lurking around us. But a sukkah is a house that's open to the world, a house that freely acknowledges that it cannot be the basis of our security, that we need to let go of this. The illusion of protection falls away, and suddenly we are flush with our life, feeling our life, following our life, doing its dance one step after another. And the breathing exercise that we did before the meditation was a way of taking in this feeling of life that has its complications and perhaps pain and suffering, but that we're taking it in with the awareness that it's a shared pain, that all people have pains of different sorts or another. And that's, again, not to diminish that some people suffer much more than others, even among this group. Physically, from what I know, that's true. But I think that, you know, we don't know what goes on in each other's lives, and we all have suffering. But to be breathing it in together it's like our meditating together. It forms community, and not that our tradition is saying, let's form a community of suffering, but let's form a community of support. And then, just as the breath is transformed, and I was really intentionally feeling it today, that as I breathed out, there was this, it was almost like a tingling for me to me, it was a cleaning out. You know, I imagined it as a maybe a detox. What I was breathing out was the experience of being detoxed. So the experience of being healed. I wasn't breathing all this bad stuff out to everybody else. I was breathing out the experience of feeling healed on a level, if you want to call it that. And that's also done as a community. Alan Liu says that there's a cathartic joy that happens on Sukkot as well, that after the anxiety of the high holidays and going through that experience, that Sukkot is that we are joyous that we will live another year, and that as we go from the safety of a real house to a sense that material things are and our actions are not what keeps us safe, but it's the connection with our humanity and our joint humanity and God that really keeps us safe. And he says something, that joy is not the same as fun, even though I think that we have a lot of singing and a lot of just what we could call fun, inviting people into our sukkah and, you know, making meals and enjoying that whole long holiday, and then it moves into Simchat Torah eventually, which is, you know, a lot of dancing and joy. But in Sukkot, it's the joy is much more a deep release of the soul. And he says that that's when we feel most fully human, that when we open up our souls and our hearts and our spirit to accept everything, to just hold it, we are, it's almost like our souls are floating in a sense of some kind of other safety than this physical safety. And that is the primary experience of feeling human, which I find very intriguing, and I would love to know how the rest of you think about that. Rabbi Abraham Twersky, who I know primarily through my work with Jews affected by addiction, but he's an Orthodox rabbi, unfortunately no longer alive, who wrote this wonderful book, among many other books. It's called Let Us Make Man, and it's a book about self-esteem through Jewish tradition, and it's short chapters. So he talks about simcha, the Jewish word that we use for joy on Sukkot, as joy. And he says that you would think that if there's one message to encapsulate what Hasidus, what the Hasidim say about simcha, it would be, simcha is in, despair is out. That's their byline, so to speak. But he says that self-esteem is essential for simcha. Now, remember, we're not talking, again, we're not talking about jumping up for joy. We're talking about, he says, spiritual joy is dependent on a feeling that one is worthwhile, that one's life has a purpose, and that there is significance to one's existence in the universe. So a person feeling worthy and feeling that they're significant in the grand scheme of things, that's what spiritual joy is. And he adds that joy is built on hope. And hope comes from the awareness, not necessarily the experience of or the belief in, but the awareness that distress is not permanent. So if someone is depressed or if someone is distressed, and he focuses more, he's a psychiatrist as well as an Orthodox rabbi, and he says that, he thinks that a lot of times when people are labeled as clinically depressed, it's really distress, but that's maybe a side conversation. I may be using the words interchangeably. He doesn't. He says that if you are distressed, but you are willing to acknowledge, or that you have an awareness that there could be a way for things to be better, that it's not permanent, that you're going to be like, that you're going to feel this way, that's hope. And the way that you help a person come to have that hope is to help them to feel worthy. Mm-hmm. That if they feel a sense of worthiness, then they can move to having hope I'm presuming that sense of worthiness can lead them to an awareness that, maybe I don't always have to feel only distress, that there are other emotions I can feel, and that gives them hope to maybe move forward. So that's really the joy that, I realize that I'm bringing in a lot of psychology into this, but I've always found that the rabbis and Hasidut as well have a tremendous amount of psychology in in their wisdom, even if they don't call it that, perhaps there's a danger of coming out of the high holidays with this sense of, okay, I've been cleared of my sins and the way ahead is all there for me. There's, you know, theoretically, it's unblocked. I have my my agency, and I also have where to look for help in my life. And then this distress of, but you know, what do I do with it, or how do I do it, or everybody else knows what they're doing and I don't, and that moving into Sukkot, first of all, it's a way of continuing to be with people, not with the huge kahal that we have on the high holidays, but in the Sukkah, at least, you know, to be eating meals with people. But also to be able to hold the fact that this perfect whiteness that we embody at the end of the high holidays isn't real the rest of the time. And how do we hold both of those things at the same time? How do we hold the simcha of Sukkot and the charge to live in a fragile, insecure house so that we know we are creatures who need help and who may experience distress? And I'll love to hear your comments.